5 seconds. Yep.
And welcome back to our program as we continue on live wire this morning. You may remember it was in April, I believe, we had a chance to speak with my next guest, Ray DePuola. At the time, he had a book out all about, it's called A Dog Before a Soldier, and it was set in the Revolutionary War era and was part of a duology series called Those Damned Yankees. Well, Ray has released the second part of that two-part series. The book called Can't Find My Way Home came out last week. And again, focusing on the American Revolution, but a very interesting perspective of the American Revolution. And we've got Ray on the line with us again this morning. Ray, welcome back.
Thanks, Mac. Thanks for having me back.
Yeah, certainly. Let's talk about, first off, the whole duology itself, then we'll get into this particular book. What were you trying to establish? Because you're a former U.S. Naval officer yourself. What are you hoping to accomplish with this these two books?
Well, I wrote the book, in fact, first I wrote it as one book, and then I later split it in half into a duology on the advice of my literary agent. But what I was trying to accomplish were two things mainly. The first one was to educate folks that the American Revolution was a lot more complicated than most of our history tells us. And it lasted 8 years and was very nasty. It was actually one down in the South. Most people don't quite realize that. There was a lot of interesting things and twists and turns, and we were very lucky, to have come out on top of that one. And then the other thing I wanted to bring out was that the people that I saw during my career in the Navy, 24-year career, they really haven't changed. And I used a lot of the same types of people as characters in the book during the Revolutionary period, because I just personally think that our technology changes, the political landscape changes, but the people who serve, particularly the people who come into the military, they're timeless. And people, the relationships are, I think, are probably the same back then or back thousands of years ago that they are today. So I wanted to basically bring that out, and I had a lot of fun writing the book and a lot of fun doing that.
And your book is a historical fiction, but it leans very heavy on the history aspect. You did a lot of research involving the Revolutionary War to make that aspect of this book very factual.
I did. I used the American Revolution as a roadmap to propel my main character along. So I had to. I started at the very beginning, or even before the beginning of the conflict, and I used it as a timeline, sort of a river to transport him down from one place to another as the story progressed. And I said to myself, if I'm going to write a book, historical fiction, I have an obligation to be absolutely accurate and to do a good job. And quite frankly, the challenge was not writing too much, because there's so much out there, so many interesting facets out there to write about, that I had a lot of trouble picking and choosing, what to put in and what to leave out, because it's a lot more complicated story than most people realize.
The main character in the book is named Jack Halliday, and for listeners who don't remember from the first book, he was British. He fought for the British, but then he deserted after seeing something that involved his commanding officer. So he was someone who, acting unconscious, almost was pushed into the Continental Army, wasn't he?
Yes, so he does desert. He was a British foot soldier who joined just out of desperation as a way to support himself. He had some bad luck. He got himself in a little trouble. He had to desert, and he was lucky. He was taken in by a wealthy landowner in Annapolis, Maryland. And then the landowner is drafted into the Continental Army as a colonel through the lottery system that they had. And he doesn't want to go, so he manipulates Jack into serving as his surrogate, as was a common practice back then, along with a slave, Custis. And then both of them go off to serve in the stead of the wealthy landowner, now in the Continental Army. Jack is now made into an officer. He's commissioned second lieutenant, and he goes to fight under General Washington in 1780 as the war transitioned down to the Deep South.
Yeah, and again, you mentioned this, the fact that when we think about the Revolutionary War, ordinarily we don't think about the Southern states. We forget that there were 13 states at the time, and most of us just think about what was going on in the Northeast, New York, New Hampshire, Connecticut, Pennsylvania, those areas. And as you indicated, the South played a key role in the Revolutionary War, but it was a different... the thing, too, we have to remember, it was a different approach that they took when it came to battles, and even the way some of the people that were within their confines, they were treated. Like the slave Custis in this book, he's viewed a little differently in the South, obviously, than he is in the North.
Yes, and he's viewed differently because, obviously there were more slave owners in the South, but even in the North, where he comes from in Maryland, he's viewed as a commodity, not necessarily a person. He's viewed more as something of value that people want to possess, but they don't want to possess him, or they don't see him as a person. They see him as something to be possessed, like a car or something else. So he's constantly trying to constantly take him away for their own purposes. And Jack spends a lot of his time trying to put a stop to that, as they go from place to place, they get separated from the Continental Army and have to try to find a way to make it back to Annapolis. And that's where I got the name for the book, Can't Find My Way Home, because about half the book involves them just trying to survive in the South and find their way back, back to the North.
And to me, the book, obviously, again, it... You focus on the Revolutionary War, but the way I look at it, it's a book about a very deeply forged friendship and two men who, quite honestly, came from two completely different sides and were kind of thrown together and ended up forging quite the friendship for survival.
Yeah, that's true. That is, the second book is about that friendship, and Jack has a lot of respect for Custis. He doesn't see him at all as a commodity, sees him as a person. He has a lot of admiration for Custis. Custis is literate. Jack is illiterate. Custis is intelligent. He's a very capable person in his own right. And in fact, he tells Custis, now that we're gone, why don't you just leave? I won't say anything. No one's gonna know why you left. You can go, you'll make a life for yourself. And Custis looks at him and says, why would I want to do that? I'm a black guy, and where am I going to go that's going to be any better than where I came from? My best bet is to go right back to where I came from at the farm from Mr. Coleman, because I get treated the best there. So Jack and Custis, they have, it's a mutual admiration club between them, and they kind of fill in each other's blanks, but they do form a very deep and lasting friendship. In the end, that friendship continues on, as the book ends.
Why'd you stop at a duology? Do you feel like there's more of this story that you could add on in the future?
Well, I am going to write another book. I wrote the book. When I first wrote the book, I just wrote it as one book. I was convinced by my literary agent to split it into two books, and the natural break was where I broke it, right as Jack goes off, to be a Continental soldier. And so, I guess it's doing, it is, I argued with her, my agent, that wasn't really going to work, that wasn't really what I wanted, but she's been in the business a while. She convinced me that it was going to be more impactful to people who read it if I did do it that way. And so far, she's been right. But now that I'm finished with this one, I do have another book that I'm going to write. But I'm not a historian. I have a natural interest in the subject, but I don't plan to write another book on the Revolutionary War or or anything even close. My next book is fiction, but it's in a completely different direction.
I think people who read your book, though, because of the way you incorporate history into it, might be surprised to learn, how turbulent. What we get as far as the Revolutionary War is concerned is usually kind of a quick gloss over when we study history, and we have our own thoughts. We unless we really delve deep into it, don't realize how torn the nation was, how difficult it was and the fact that we were dealing with untrained soldiers for the most part on the continental side. There's a lot that goes into this. It was really a turbulent period of time in our nation's history.
People today think that we're living in a turbulent time right now politically, and we kind of are, but it's really nothing compared to the turbulence that happened back in the 18th century. You had people that were loyal to the British government. You had about a third of the people were loyal to the British government. You had about a third that wanted to break away, and you had about a third that was somewhere in the middle. But those on either end, if you were a loyalist, say after the Battle of Lexington and Concord up in Massachusetts, you had to get out of your house because your neighbors were going to come and kill you and burn your house down. So anybody that was a loyalist after the shooting started had to flee into Boston to be protected by the British there. And the same thing happened in all the other provinces where, people took up sides. The worst of it was actually in South Carolina, where there was no middle ground. You were either for the British government or you weren't. And those people, almost everybody in that province was part of some kind of militia that was out to kill the other side. So that kind of turbulence is not something we're experiencing here now. So I tell people that, this is nothing. It may be significant, relative to other things, but in our history, we've never been more turbulent than, during that period.
Well, and again, you start digging and delving, and I don't want to get too far off the rails here, but the violent ways that these people fought and battled, because you think about it, basically with the gun, you had one shot, and then you had to be real quick to reload. So you had to be good at hand-to-hand combat. You mentioned the folks in the South, we always heard about the Swamp Fox and those folks. They went at it a way that most of us in today's world would look at being as barbaric, but that's the way they were taught. That's the way they knew at the time, and that's probably what led them to victory.
Yeah, it was pretty mean and in your face. And then you had also the Native Americans that shows up sides, and they didn't discriminate between men, women, or children. It pretty much killed everybody that was on the wrong side, according to them. But what the British liked to do, the most powerful weapon they had was actually the bayonet. And if they could get you to the point where they could charge with a bayonet, they knew that most armies on the other end of that would not stick around, that they would break the will of the other side just by the mere fact of coming at them with a wall of steel spikes. So that was their trump card, if you will, and that was pretty nasty stuff. But that's the way the warfare was. That was the technology. And it was pretty brutal.
You gave both your books interesting titles. You explained I Can't Find My Way Home, the title for that. And, of course, we discussed A Dog Before a Soldier before. But even the title of the duology, Those Damned Yankees, you put some thought into what you wanted this to be known as.
I did, but even though I did put some thought, when it came time to name the book, it wasn't that hard. When it came time to name the series, it was actually, even though I did put some thought into it, but it came to me pretty fast. And I think, the book was when I first wrote the book, I had envisioned calling it just Damned Yankees. Then when I broke it up into two, I had to change that around. I had to come up with two new titles. They came to me pretty quickly.
As you said, these were intended to be part of one book, but what would you consider to be the main differences between the two when you split them up, besides the fact that Jack is, in the first book, if I remember correctly, he was a British soldier, now he's in the Continental Army. Is that the main difference there?
That's one of the differences. I mean, that was a natural place to break it up, you know, so the first book's a little bit bigger, and Jack is a, you know, he's a private in the British Army. In the second book, he's actually a commissioned officer in the Continental Army. But I would tell you, though, that to me, it actually took me about more than 20 years to write the book. Hmm. And the first half of the book, because I'm a procrastinator, and I just picked at it, and I picked at it, and I picked at it. And so I wrote the first half in about, it took me about 20 years. And then I got to the part where, you know, Jack goes off to fight in the Continental Army, and I said to myself, you know, I don't have another 20 years left in me. I need to finish this thing, and I need to stop messing around, and I need to, you know, get some courage here and finish what I'm doing. And so I wrote the second half of the book, or I wrote the second book in about 4 months and finished it off, because I was upset with myself. I haven't taken so long. So, and because I was doing it now every day and not procrastinating and picking at it, you know, the writing became stronger and a lot more came out of my subconscious. So the whole story with Jack and Custis is not something I had envisioned in the beginning. But when I started writing the second half of it, and I was doing it on a consistent basis, and it was coming out of me more subconsciously than I was just thinking about it, that's what came out. So I think the second half of the book, for the second book, you know, yes, Jack is now a Continental soldier, but it's more of a story, it's more pure fiction than it is historical fiction, because it's more about a story about two people trying to survive in a bad circumstance. So to me, that's the real difference between the two books. I think the second book is better, actually, because I think the writing's stronger.
I am curious, and again, this goes back to the historical aspect of it. How commonplace was it for British soldiers to desert and flip sides during the Revolutionary War?
It happened more than you might think, and it was very common for British soldiers to desert. Not necessarily to switch sides, but they definitely deserted. Also, the Hessians. But see, as a deserter, now what are you going to do? You've got to support yourself somehow. You know, you're a British deserter. Where are you going to go to get a job? Where are you going to go to put a roof over your head? So a lot of those soldiers that did desert the British Army found themselves right back in the Continental Army, because fighting was something that they knew how to do. And the Continental Army would take them in a heartbeat and feed them, clothe them, you know, care for them. So if there were a lot of people that went into the military on both sides, actually, did so out of desperation because they needed to support themselves. And that's also something that I wanted to, you know, to bring out. A lot of people think of the Revolutionary War as being fought by militias, and it was in large part. But at a point early on in the war, Washington realized that he wasn't going to win. He wasn't going to survive. Not only wasn't going to win, he wasn't even going to survive and stay intact utilizing militias. And he talked Congress into authorizing to raise a standing army, which was a very, very, very unpopular thing to do, particularly in our young country. But it was very, you know, standing armies were looked at as very dangerous. You know, Congress didn't want to give Washington his own army because he could turn into Caesar. That had happened so many times before. But out of desperation, they let him go. And once they gave Washington the authority to raise a standing army that drew in a lot of people like British deserters, actually, that otherwise would have no place to go. So it happened actually quite a bit.
Your military background, how much did that help you in writing this book, or maybe even could you have written this book without your military background, do you feel?
Maybe I could have written it, but I wouldn't have come out the same way. You know, I watch a lot of movies and read books, and they're written, military content. And typically, I'm irritated by the dialogue, you know, by the way that the characters are portrayed, because it's not real. It doesn't, you know, to me, it's not done the right way. So I wanted to write this book where if you're a veteran and you read it, you're going to say, yeah, that's the way it is. Even though it may be 250 years ago, you're going to recognize that this is how people relate to each other. And what I did is I did exhaustive research for the historical content, but for the narrative and for the characters and for their interactions, all I did was I took my own personal experience for the last about 24 years in the Navy, and I transposed them into the story where I saw the same kinds of people over and over again. So there's no one in the book that's real, that's an actual character, but they're composite characters of the types of people that I've seen, you know, over and over again. And so I just took my own personal experience and transposed it back into, you know, into the book as far as the relationships between different people.
Now, the entire series is available. The duology series is available. What are you hoping ultimately that people take away from this?
Two things. I'd like them to be able to say when they finish, gee, I learned a lot. I didn't know a lot of this stuff, and it's really interesting. So, you know, a bit of education, you know, for our founding. And the second thing is, you know, I'd like them to know that the main character in particular, these are the kind of people that populate the military, that populate any military, and they populate our military. The kind of folks that they're quiet. They just want to do their jobs. They don't get into the politics. They know that part of something bigger than themselves, and they just put their head down and work. And I want people to be able to see and appreciate folks that are in the military today are very much like my main character in this book.
Ray, where can the books be found?
The easiest place is to go to Amazon. You can Google A Dog Before Soldier or Can't Find My Way Home in my name. Amazon or Barnes & Noble, available paperback and also ebook. And you can also go to my website, which is raydeptulaauthor.com, and you can purchase the book or take a look at the books if you like on the website. Yeah, raydeptulaauthor.com, both available there.
And I got to toss this out there. If, say, Hollywood were to come calling, they read your books and said, hey, we want to turn this into a movie, who would you cast as Halliday?
That's a really good question. He needs to be a young guy. I'd be more interested in who is going to make the movie, because I think that, I mean, I'm not in a position to be picky, but there's a lot of poor movies out there, and I would be real hesitant to make a deal with anybody that wasn't, you know, at the level of, say, a Steven Spielberg or something like that, who would really do a good job. I don't want it messed up. But as far as who would be cast, I think about that all the time, and I don't think I have an answer for that. But I personally think it would be a good movie or series. And hopefully that happens. I hope it happens. That'd be a lot of fun.
And this is just me, because of the fact that he is British and he's a young guy. Tom Holland, the guy that plays Spider-Man, I think would be a good, you know, person to portray Jack, because the guy shows a lot of emotion and he's the ability to go along that route. But there are so many other, again, I hope people read the book and create the pictures in their own mind first, because that's what it's all about. That's what reading's all about. And you bring it to vivid life with your series. And I urge them to get the entire series, not just the one book, but buy both and read them through. And you're going to come away with a little bit of a historical knowledge and appreciation for, as you said, not only what occurred back then, but even what's occurring today.
Yeah, and I hope so too. And it's doing interviews like this that hopefully get me exposed a little bit more. And the book exposed, not me personally, but I would like as many people as possible to at least know about the book. And hopefully as many people as they can read it. That would make me very happy.
Well, Ray, thank you for reaching out again, and good luck with part two of your Damned Yankees series, or duology. And again, this book is out now. The book is called Can't Find My Way Home. It came out last week, and you can find it at Amazon, along with the other book called Dog Before a Soldier. Buy them both, and you get yourself a good read, and learn, as I said, a little something in the process. Ray, thank you so much. Have yourself a great day.
Thank you, Mike. Thank you for having me on.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
That's Ray Deptula again. He wrote both.